Hello and good afternoon. You're listening to KVSH LP 101.9 FM, home of our island's own Voice of Vashon. My name is March Twisdale, producer and host of Prose, Poetry, and Purpose. I am pleased to bring you two new interviews over the next 2 months as we head into the winter solstice and holiday season. My brand new October interview with Islander Dane Rogers and his cohorts will air at the normal time, 1 p.m. on Tuesdays, while our November interview, which is the second in a series, will air at 2:30 p.m., also on Tuesdays. This is because we were having so much fun, the interview ran over, and there was nothing I wanted to cut. So VOV has found us a 90-minute spot. Thank you, VOV. These two interviews coalesce around what is known as the Free Grace Movement, begun auspiciously by Martin Luther and John Calvin, who taught that justification through faith alone is the grounds for assurance of salvation. In today's interview and next month, we'll delve more deeply into this and associated questions of theology and learn about a new publishing company created by Dane, Brad, and Morgan, which will be putting out an amazing-sounding book for the holidays. Listen today and next month to learn more, and if you've only caught a portion of the show, you can go to my website at marchtwisdale.com and catch the rest of it. Have a great day, and here we go. Since you're the Islander, and a lot of people here on the island probably know you, I'm going to go ahead and ask you to do a quick little introduction of these two lovely people that you've brought into the studio, and then we'll let them each elaborate a bit on that.
Absolutely.
Okay, go for it.
All right. Well, yeah, my name's Dane Rogers. I grew up on the island, and I've come back after about 10 years away in various countries, so glad to be back, loving island life again, and I brought with me some friends here that I've met along the way. One is Dr. Brad Mastin from Fort Collins, Colorado, and the other is Morgan Arnold from Texas, from Denton, Texas, originally, right?
Originally.
Yeah.
Right on. And so you guys are here because Dane and I got together a while ago. I interviewed, well, didn't interview, invited him to actually do some writing for our island's newspaper, the Vashon Loop. And we have always enjoyed chatting and just had so much fun. And then he, of course, was explaining to me all this awesome stuff that you guys are doing together, this great project. And so, Brad, if you could go ahead and let our listeners know a little bit about this project, and then Morgan, I'll go ahead and ask you a few questions too.
Absolutely. We have actually all, as scholarly people, both Dane and Morgan, are seminary students, right? All, both seeking advancing knowledge and understanding of Scripture, and that's where we encountered one another. So we all have an interest in books, and particularly spreading the message, or a message, right out through the place that we live. And now, with the ease and increased accessibility to publishing, both Dane and I had personally and privately published books, but one of the things that doesn't come with that is the recognition of having a publishing house. Mm-hmm. And so the thought, as we share so much identity, both in our personal friendship as well as in our passion for seeing books published, both fiction and nonfiction, but particularly with a theological bent, it became obvious that we had to partner on this project to start True Grace Books. Mm-hmm. And so through a series of wonderful events, I had been working on a project myself to just get more exposure for young theologians. And of course, you know, Dane is such a talented writer, and that of course led us to invite Morgan to be a part of this project. And I thought it was just going to be a one-off, but then Dane called me one day and said, well, you know, my secretary could spend 90 or 1,000 hours figuring out how to found an actual publishing company, and we were off to the races. And that created such a surprising response within our faith community that we realized that this was going to be something bigger for us and bigger for the as an opportunity to help find people a voice and an ability to get their thoughts, their ideas out there in a world where that's possible and accessible, but they lack the knowledge to do so.
One of the things that I think is really awesome is this shift that's happened in the world, and I'm not even sure that I can particularly pinpoint really where it happened, but it is a beautiful thing to witness the accessibility of the publishing industry as a concept to mm-hmm. more and more people, whether it's podcasting. I mean, you know, everyone knows, you look at what Joe Rogan is doing and the number of people who listen to him, and you, or Russell Brand, or, mm-hmm. you know, and you compare that to mainstream media, and it's just night and day. So there, I guess, isn't it almost like a democratization of not just media, but democratization of the exchange of information? I mean, I'm not even sure how to express it, but I'm really excited to see it. And here I am sitting with two people who 50 years ago might not have found it quite as accessible.
Mm-hmm. And you think about going back in time, you know, distributing zines or some kind of a little private publication that you've done with a Xerox, you know, would be the way that you could get information out there at the kind of grassroots level. But now that's available to anybody. It's yeah. a really mm-hmm. exciting time.
No, it absolutely is. I mean, yes, it's like you guys are part of the new generation of Benjamin Franklins, right? You know,
because that's generous.
Well, no, because I mean, it's like he was like, oh, look, we can do this thing. Society's getting to this point. I'm in a big enough city. And so let's distribute. Mm-hmm. Right. And really, actually, freedom of information distribution is, I mean, I don't even know how to like explain just how that's on the pinnacle of the most important things that we can maintain in society.
Right. So, because if you think about it, that the barrier to entry has come down so far, where in the mm-hmm. past, maybe there's been, you always are having expected the elite to be able to produce things, and you have to have skins on the wall to be able to get your name out there. And now, you know, we see that in the recording industry with music. And now we're seeing it too in the publishing industry, where somebody, just because they have not a lot of name recognition, but maybe they have a gift of writing, mm-hmm. now we're going to give them an opportunity to be able to showcase their thoughts and expressions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You know, what's interesting is if at some point you want to look into the publishing industry in Iceland, mm-hmm. I don't know if you're familiar, but it's like completely normal for people in Iceland to publish a book in their life. It's way more than 10%. I think it's like 20% of people or so who live in Iceland will publish a book. And it's so cultural that they sort of like, they all do it. And then you end up like getting a bunch of copies. You send them all your friends and your family. And it's just this normal thing to get, mm-hmm. you know. And so different cultures can be at different places on that spectrum of, you know, how publication and putting your thoughts out there is supported or not supported. Mm-hmm. Like North Korea, I'm not seeing that as a place where there's probably a lot of self-publishing.
No.
Yeah, and I had the unique opportunity to publish a book in Korea.
South Korea.
In South Korea. And it was kind of fascinating how that all came about. I wrote a bunch of short stories, and I was teaching a class on short story writing. And so we wanted to get my students' stories published. And so the company that I worked for is like, well, yeah, we'll find a way to do this. And then one that I had written along the way, they got a hold of that because I was using it for the curriculum. And they're like, can we turn this into an ESL book? Mm-hmm. And so they turned that into a little ESL book with pictures and whatnot. And the deal that I made with them, which was an interesting deal, they get that full rights to it. They can print it as much as they want. They can have it. And then they publish a book for me, including that story, but a bunch of other stories as well. But the things that they were concerned with was not what's in this book, what's the content of it, is it engaging or interesting, but is it well presented? Mm-hmm. They wanted to make sure that the book was just the most beautiful thing, because it was going to have their reputation attached to it. And they cared so much about the aesthetic of the book. And that it made me realize just how much we are losing sometimes as we're moving towards a more internet-based expression of information. That this has given us the opportunity here to publish, to put more things out there, but we're also losing the rigor. Yeah. Just the taking enough care in your own thing to make sure that it actually looks nice when you're presenting it. It sounds good, that the whole experience of receiving this information is not only edifying, but enjoyable as well. And I mean, one reason why we have created this publishing company is because we aren't really welcome in big publishing houses because of our theological angle. It doesn't really matter how well you can write, how good of a theologian you are, if you hold the right views. If you hold those right views, they'll get ghostwriters to write your stuff for you. They'll make it sound fine. They'll make it sound good. It doesn't matter if you're a talented writer or not. It doesn't matter if you're a talented theologian. If you're not of this particular bent, you're not getting published in their publishing house.
Well, I think it's interesting you sort of brought up two things. And so one of them is, and it's why self-publishing did sort of get a little bit of a bad name there, right? You know, for a period of time. And you still, I mean, readers are discerning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, when I first, like 10 years ago, when I started working on a novel, and when I would go and look at self-published books, because I was trying to figure out what direction I wanted to head, I found that there were a lot of self-published books that I would start to read, you know, on Kindle or something like that, you know, and like in the first page, okay, the first page, there'd be like three spelling typos. Mm-hmm. And like, I never read page two because that just stopped me right there. You lose all confidence. So on one hand, and I think we're coming out of this because, as you say, a lot of people were like, I mean, okay, if I rise to the level that the reader demands, then it'll do great. And there are some people doing really good with self-publishing now, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's what, but my question for you real quick, and then we'll come back more to this beautiful publishing company and all these other things. South Korea, especially when I watch some of the South Korean shows, right? Mm-hmm. We've talked a little bit about some of those. I haven't been there, mm-hmm. but my perception from how the shows present things is it actually, I don't know if it, I would say it's your public image or it's your appearance or what it is, but everything I've seen in the world of South Korea is like they care about, what's the word? What do they care about? Public image was the word for it.
Yeah, how you view them and what they do.
Yeah.
They want it to be like polished culturally and clean and just finished. So mm-hmm. much of what we do is just not finished. And I mean, American music industry, we love having that really unpolished sound where it sounds like it's still on an LP or something like that. And they just don't have that mm-hmm. There. They want it to be polished, beautiful, and in a very, I would say, a very conservative sense.
Right. You look at the clothing, you look at the hairstyles, you look mm-hmm. at, I mean, literally everything coming out of South Korea. I'm like, oh, they care, which is mm-hmm. not a criticism. I
public
love,
image.
Yeah, I love cultures being different. It's what makes the world interesting and spicy. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's dive in here a little bit to the meat mm-hmm. of the interview, which is this publishing company. And there's obviously a story behind how it got started. But let's just step first into the name and mm-hmm. how you guys started, you know, to go through the process of figuring out, my gosh, how are we going to name this? I mean, that's actually huge. You mm-hmm. know, parents spend a lot of time figuring out what to name their pug. I'm sorry, I meant child. just only halfway joking there. So tell me about what the name means and why it's important.
Well, Grace is a very peculiar...
Wait, what is the name?
Oh, the name of the house is True Grace Publishing, or True Grace Books, rather. And okay. True Grace Books, we knew that it would involve the concept of grace because grace is such an important concept in Christianity as a whole, right? I mean, you think about the greatest hymn of all time, Amazing Grace, right? And so that idea of grace is central to Christianity as regardless of denomination. However, mm-hmm. everybody will define grace uniquely based upon their theological position or their historical research or understanding or various other features. And our theological position has very much to do with the concept that God in his love provides salvation by grace. And we define grace as a free gift, a no strings attached gift that can be received by faith alone. So because that is the central ethic of our belief system, we knew that grace would have to be involved. And there is continued discussion as to how people want to use and define grace, and there's a movement called Free Grace, which are people who largely share our viewpoints. However, there's been enough disagreement within that camp for us to want to define ourselves very specifically as true grace, or the authentic grace of God, as being, again, central to our thinking and our publishing efforts and our desire to produce and get these thoughts out of the love and the grace and the care that God exercises towards people that he created and loved.
So what you're saying is that free grace, which we'll get into in a minute because Dane had brought that up a second ago, and mm-hmm. I have follow-up questions on that. Mm-hmm. Is it free grace is an umbrella term for a community of people that have some shared perspectives? And obviously, if you had actually named your publishing company that, people would make the natural assumption that somehow you were restrained or limited by their understanding of what free grace meant. And so stepping away from that label allowed you to still focus on grace, but not get hemmed in by people who make assumptions about you.
Yes. And also there's a reality within kind of the nature of our relationship to that label, mm-hmm. That it would almost be like calling yourself Republican books or Democrat books, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have right to, mm-hmm. to claim mm-hmm. that moniker. It would be mm-hmm. dishonest. So grabbing the true grace moniker attaches us to the similarity of perspective on grace, hopefully distances us from some of the peculiar perspectives that we like to, and also highlights the importance and centrality of that ideology to us.
Right. So if I understand correctly, as a person, well, I'm 50 years old, and I grew up in a family that did not raise me with any sort of a religious perspective mm-hmm. whatsoever. I had, I was aware when my mom would check things out or something like that. My dad was just an atheist, and that's fine. He was lovely. So I don't have any basis of knowledge as an individual person really around the world of Christianity and Christian thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what I was hearing from you, Dane, was that within, because at first when you mentioned the need for creating your own publishing company, it was sort of like what I was hearing, checking to see if I'm correct, that mm-hmm. within the world of Christian publishing, because I am as a writer, I'm very clear, there's people who, if you want to write romance, if you want to write Christian fiction, if you want to write mm-hmm. sci-fi, all of these genres have complete rules of what is and is not okay.
Mm-hmm.
So within the world of Christian publishing, it seems that you guys are perceiving that there are some narrowed expectations and limits that you didn't fit inside of, and so you needed to create some publishing space for yourself and people who you're actually giving space to publish, because you're not just publishing yourselves, you're creating space for all these other amazing thinkers and theologians.
Mm-hmm.
There
Absolutely.
We go. So is there a feeling that there's prejudice or block in the traditional Christian publishing world?
Yes. I would argue that, and this is a tragedy, but an honest and frank admission, that Christian publishing is not that dissimilar from other publishing in mm-hmm. that the big goal is ultimately to make money,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially you get at the corporate level, Christianity or faith becomes some level of product. So just like, Madonna can write a children's book, and of course we're going to publish it because everyone's going to buy Madonna's children's book. It's not that we know she's talented or not. It's not important. Name recognition alone will push it. And we mm-hmm. have that same principle within the context of Christian publishing in general. So there are people with great celebrity or following, and they will tend to be the ones that, again, get published again and again and again. And, I mean, those people worked hard for that, right? It's not mm-hmm. as if this is somehow unfair or an old boys club. And book publishers in general who have committed themselves professionally to the affair are necessarily going to make decisions based on what they're confident is going to sell. It's their job. And that's a big part of what we think is special about True Grace Books is none of us are financially tied to the outcomes of this. It's about giving people that we believe are theologically worthwhile a voice and an opportunity to speak out and get published in this world where it's possible, it's available. But again, there's a huge learning curve in getting to that beautiful product, that product that is accessible and its quality of production matches the importance of its message.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm a fiction writer. So when I was thinking Christian publishing, I've actually worked with people and interviewed people here at the show who are leaning in that direction, right? And so I was sort of thinking fiction. But there clearly is a world out there of nonfiction religious writing, for lack of a better word, that I'm thoroughly ignorant of. So, but I would have thought within that realm of Christian publishing, I in this naivete that I have, I'm like, oh, but they're Christians, you know. Sorry, wow, naive woman here. Okay, so I just sort of thought, like, all aspects of introspection and curiosity and exposition and exploration would be sort of equally valued. Wow, I am naive. Okay, so you guys are here creating space where space needs to be created. This is awesome. How did you meet these guys?
Well, great. So
Morgan, I'm asking Morgan how he met Brad and Dane.
So I am a businessman by trade, and I own a company that does internet marketing. And my wife and I, we've been Christians for 30 years, and we've actually been married for 30 years. And so we have just gotten to the point where we have become empty nesters. And so we were looking at each other and saying, you know, once the kids are out of the house, what do we do with the last one third of our lives? You know, so it's like we looked around and said, you know, how can we serve the Lord? How can we make a difference in people's lives? And I have really enjoyed teaching. I teach back in Texas. I teach with an organization that's called Bible Study Fellowship. And Bible Study Fellowship is where people from all different denominations come together, kind of like a community, and we all get a chance to study the Bible together, and I get a chance to teach that. We go verse by verse through different books of the Bible. But just because I've enjoyed teaching so much, I realized that, hey, if I want to maybe teach more, I need to be able to learn how to do it the right way. I don't want it to be Morgan's interpretation of the Bible. I want it to be whenever the Apostle Paul wrote something, what did he mean when he wrote it? And try to get the author's intention. And so I want to make sure there's plenty of people that get up in the pulpit every Sunday and they're preaching their own philosophies or their own theologies. And I just want to preach the Bible in the way that that it was meant to be taught and so forth. And so I got a chance to go to, I decided that what the best thing to do would be able to go to seminary and to be able to get some additional training. And so as I looked around, there's so many really good seminaries out there, but with the theology that that we have gained with regard to believing in free grace, there's only a few free grace Bible colleges or a few free grace seminaries, and so the one that we chose was called Chafer Seminary, and so I started taking classes with Chafer, and the very first class that I took is a class that it's all online. But it's a class that I took where Professor Brad Maston was my professor, and it was a class that was called Spiritual Life. And what it had to do was, it's basically, how can you grow in your faith? How can you become a stronger Christian so that when trials come, we don't just buckle down? We have the strength that God's given us to be able to endure, to persevere, and to encourage others that there's an answer. And so I got a chance to meet these guys because Dane has been a student at Chafer. In fact, in that very class that I had with Dr. Maston, Dane was one of my fellow students. And so we got a chance to know each other, and we've had a great friendship for about 3 years now as we're pursuing a degree together.
Oh, right. So you're going, because you said seminary school, and I was thinking that takes a while. And then you mentioned like a class, and I thought, well, wait. How far are you through your educational process?
Sure. So there's different levels of different master's degrees that you can take. So this one master's degree that I'm working for is called a Master's of Biblical Studies, and it takes 3 years typically to be able to have a Master's of Biblical Studies. And I'm 2 years into it, so I've got one more year left before I get that. But I think I'm going to continue on and get an advanced degree as well to continue to learn. We learn the original languages. We get a chance to learn what they call Koine Greek. So it's New Testament Greek. The word Koine means common. So it's kind of like the everyman's, you know, that's the way that the Bible was written. The Bible wasn't written in some kind of classical Greek. It was written in an everyman's language, that every person's language, to be able to so that we can spread these ideas and be able to share these ideas and share the good news that what God has done. And we also get a chance to learn Hebrew. So the Old Testament was written in Hebrew. So this wonderful seminary that we're a part of actually emphasizes getting into the original languages as well. So it's to be able to pick up a Hebrew copy of the Old Testament and to be able to read it, that's pretty amazing. It's like taking your Bible reading from a two-dimensional perspective and putting it to a three-dimensional perspective, and you're able to see so many more things as a result of being able to learn the original languages.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's, and now you and your wife made this decision together.
Correct.
And it's an online class.
Online.
Is she herself enrolled in pursuing a degree, or so you're both actually students?
She's taking some classes. In fact, the class that I took with Dr. Mastin, he offered again this past summer, and my wife is what they call auditing the class.
Yep, there you go.
She's not going for the degree, but she wanted the experience and she wanted to learn the knowledge. And so Brad got a chance to be her professor this summer and she loved it.
That's okay. And you're specifically exploring the free grace perspective on Christianity. I had sort of thought it would. So it's like free grace. Take a minute and just give me a sense of where it fits into the, what puzzle piece does it, you know, have in this world of Christianity?
Interestingly enough, I actually came from outside of free grace and into free grace, so probably more like Morgan. Brad, you had more of a foundation in free grace, I believe.
Indirectly,
okay. So I had a very eclectic growing up period. I mean, as a young kid on Vashon, we've got a lot of churches here, and we went to the Methodist Church, we went to the Episcopal Church, we went to the E Free Church, we went to the Presbyterian Church a couple of times, and so it was kind of more, as in my childhood, we'll pick the one where you've got friends, right? The E Free Church had Awana, which is a after-school mm-hmm. kids club,
right,
so
right.
We went there, and it was great. We had friends, and so I kind of grew up thinking, this is Christianity, this is what everyone does, and it is kind of the popular Christianity, like, that's what you imagine when you see a Hallmark thing. Like you're thinking of evangelicals there. Mm-hmm. And then in my high school years, we went to a Presbyterian church in Tacoma for high school. Went to a private school there. And my neighbor, who had been very influential in our faith of us kids, my siblings and I, she said, "Oh, you don't want to do that." And I said, "Well, why not?" She says, "Well, they're Calvinists." I think, okay. No idea what that is.
Right.
Yeah, and they are just delightful people. They're wonderful people. I can't agree with a lot of their conclusions. It's a very internally logical system, but it doesn't come from Scripture. It's one that they develop a theology, and then when they read Scripture, they're reading it through that lens.
But of course, you got to look a little deeper sometimes.
They would vehemently disagree with the statement that I just made, that it does not come from Scripture.
I'm
absolutely
sure.
And I would lovingly have that debate with them, and I have many occasions. In fact, I lived with just this delightful Calvinist couple up in Canada when I lived there, and I still talk with them, and we very respectfully will heatedly disagree into all hours of the night, and then she'll ask if you want another cup of coffee, and mm-hmm. you'll chat about your pets and your friends and whatnot. So it's they're brothers and sisters, yep. But we disagree. Calvinism is very popular. This is one of those mm-hmm. publishing wings or groups, and they've got multiple publishing houses that they have ready access. If some Calvinist writes a book, they can usually get their book published if they have the people behind them to do it. Calvinism really is growing, and I don't mean to just pick on Calvinism. They are brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. Dispensationalism, through its history, I think, has kind of wanted to strip itself away from that human philosophy that we think Augustine or whatnot, who brings with him all of this baggage from the Greek world, and he tries to implant it into Christianity when Christianity is coming and bringing a countercultural message.
Right.
And so you want to interpret that message through the spirit in which it's given, not through your own context, but understanding that context. Mm-hmm. And I think this is where a lot of these other very academic Christians have gone astray. It's where they're trying to read Scripture sometimes through these, well, what was the Greek mind at that time? What was the understanding at that time? We want to understand their culture, But we don't want to pretend that Paul is using these theological concepts to preach this this message of Calvinism. We want to understand that this was the context he lived in, but he was preaching against this. Like, this was not what he was using, but this was the culture he was speaking into.
Then the question is, how do we actually see it from where it's coming from rather than from elsewhere?
Right. And it's quite valuable, I think, to recognize, because obviously we're throwing around a lot of terms and in-camp, in-house ideas that could be difficult to understand. But
sure. Clarify as you wish.
Oh, thank you. Free grace is not the opposite of Calvinism. And in fact, there are plenty of people who identify with the thoughts and ideas of free grace, which are really only being titled more recently because these ideas of a free offer of salvation from God have been taught by Christianity historically, and particularly throughout your Spurgeons, your D.L. Moody's, some names that we might recognize even as household names today. They taught a simple offer of salvation that anyone who believes in Jesus Christ's sacrifice for our sin, that pays for our sin, can be saved and saved eternally because of what Jesus Christ did. So that's the core tenet of free grace.
Well, now hold on theology. A second. No, great. That's great. And for a person, for a listener
right.
who doesn't actually have the understanding of free grace that you guys have, that didn't actually sort of like sound any different than all of the other thoughts of Christianity. So actually I wanted, because I had like a 2-hour talk with Dane about this. So I want to get into, so I don't even know if it's possible, but let's actually, granted we're walking away from the publishing company piece here a little bit,
sure,
but yeah. We're going with the flow. I'm going to try this because sometimes the people who know the most have the hardest time saying it to someone who doesn't know anything in a way they can understand. So this is what I took away from our conversation at the tea shop. The impression I have is that this is sort of about, it's about the question of receivership, that you were saying that once you open your heart, I mean, I'm going to use wrong words here, but the concept might get through. Like, once you open your heart to God and you say, I am open and willing and grateful to receive grace from you, and that gift is received, that at that point, that is a permanent receipt of the gift throughout the rest of your life and through on to what comes after this life, and that things that can get people sort of bent out of shape in a way about whether you lose it, whether you mess up, you make mistakes, blah, blah, blah. I mean, because the whole point is that sinning is an inevitable state of human life, that you are not living in fear that you will lose the grace, that you have received it, that is a given gift, and you can't even give it back if you wanted to necessarily. Now, that was my takeaway from the tea shop. So now, expound on that. Tell me if it's right, wrong, whatever.
It is really important, and this is maybe shooting past the goal, but to recognize that Christianity is not monolithic. We do divide ourselves into camps and denominations, but there's a lot of interchange. And so the beautiful recitation of the gospel message that you just gave is very true to Christianity and can be heard across many denominations, right? It's just that we're defining it very specifically in a way that does offend some and does disagree with others, because there's sort of a reality that folks will say what has always been the rebuttal to the grace gospel. If you are saved by the love of God alone, by the sacrifice of Jesus Christ alone, by his perfect offer, then what's going to keep you from doing bad things? And that is the inevitable response is made by Paul, the Apostle Paul, in Romans chapter 6, where he essentially describes how sin was never enjoyable for us, but rather was a burden and a bondage, right? When you look at the just take the public sins that we all agree on without much difficulty, right? Does the murderer improve his life by murdering, or does he degrade the quality of his soul by doing so? Of course he degrades the quality of his soul. Does the alcoholic or the drug addict really improve the quality of their life, or is their life degraded by that? So what free grace theology, and I would say historical Christianity offers is the statement that once we freely receive this gift of salvation by faith, by trusting that God exists, that he's good, that he's loving, that he wants to provide it to us, that we will be free from the bondage of sin. And rather seeing sin as something fun we can get away with, we see an opportunity to be free of something, as you said, that's so entwined in our being that the idea of not sinning is difficult for us, right? And so the idea of being freed from those destructive, hateful, hurtful behaviors is inevitably attractive. And it is offered, again, only by the free gifting of God. So that's kind of where the touch point is. And there are people who will take various points of disagreement within that. But I think you very beautifully encapsulated what we believe is the heart of God and the core Christian message that he loves us so much that in spite of our rebellion and our rejection of him, that he said he would like to provide the way back.
Morgan, you had a thought.
Well, I'm just going to agree with everything that you said. I thought you encapsulated that thought very beautifully as well. But if you think about it, grace is a radical idea. And people don't realize how radical grace is. But if you think of, look, if you look at the world's religions, there's a lot of different religions out there. But what they have in common is it's always a human being's attempt to be able to reach God. So they're reaching up to try to attain godhood, or they're trying to attain paradise, or they're trying to attain nirvana through their self-efforts. And the beautiful thing about Christianity, it's just the opposite. It's not a religion, which religion would be trying to reach up and grab godhood, so to speak. But Christianity is a relationship that God loved us so much that he sent his son to earth to live and to teach and to love and to heal. And then he was put on the cross and he serves as he served as the perfect sacrifice to pay for the sins of the world. And so Christianity is different. And one of the reasons it's different is because of grace. Grace is so different in Christianity, and you don't see that in the other religions. Whereas grace, the way that you can remember grace is through the acronym G-R-A-C-E, God's riches at Christ's expense. And he gives that to us as a free gift. And all we have to do is believe in that and just trust and put our trust and faith in Jesus alone. And he changes our lives. And it's life with Christ is so much better than it was before I was a Christian. There's a peace. There's a cleanness. There's a joy that you have as being in Christ that it's hard to explain to somebody. But hopefully the way that we live our lives can demonstrate that there has been a change, that God has touched us and that we have a change in us.
So when you guys decide to create this publishing company, the goal was to regularly bring out publications on a reliable schedule. And I think we were talking, as you showed me, the I got to see the book.
You're an insider.
Secret knowledge.
Yes, yes. And so it's I'm a little curious about how there's this world out there with all these humans in it. And earlier we were talking about, you know, rigor and quality and all this, and in a way we have to make discerning decisions, right? So obviously you're going to have to, one, find people out there who are writing amazing, incredible stuff. And of course, at some point you're going to, you know, they'll come to you, you'll come to them, whatever. And so what process are you guys going through with regard to curating your content?
Well, that has been an interesting thing because as we develop our identity and our place in the world, we have certainly entertained the idea of opening the doors to anyone to apply so that we can evaluate and decide if that's a project that we can partner with. But it's been our initial passion to provide things like this essay book, Grace and Truth, that give people an opportunity to contribute to a group project, right? So we've also talked about putting together a future series of commentaries on the various books of the Bible so that we can represent and give people these options to put that forth, as well as our new project, which is a simple devotional for Christmas. So just
I was going to say, yeah, mm-hmm. You've got a really cool holiday thing coming up, yes. Right? So can you tell me anything about the Christmas thing? Or is it a secret?
It's a secret that we're excited to tell. Dane, do you
okay. Yeah, we're cool. We'll spill the beans on this one, huh? Well, yeah, and to preface it with kind of finishing off of what Brad said is one of the things that worked so well with this essay book was reaching out directly to the people to ask them, do you have anything? And we'd love to have the best you have. Mm-hmm. So it was, wasn't so much a, we need this topic covered, we need this topic covered. Can you write on this? Can you write on this? Or even putting out a call for papers.
Yeah. I was going to mention that the mm-hmm. thing with us being in seminary, part of the rigor of going through seminary life is that every class that you attend, you're pretty much writing all these papers. Mm-hmm. And so this has become like an outlet for people that are putting these papers together. Not only are they getting a grade for their class, but some of this work is really good from people that have never published before. Mm-hmm. And so now we're able to take a look at it and say, that is really a special writing that you have here. Mm-hmm. That would fit really good into our essay book or mm-hmm. into maybe a future project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what we did with the first book, what Brad mostly did, and that's how we all kind of ended up coming together and saying this could be something, was that he reached out to each one of us individually and said, do you have something to contribute to this book? I'd like to put together a book, and we want to just edify people. We want to get some of these voices out. And I remember when we took Spiritual Life with Brad at the end of the class, he was telling all of us, it doesn't matter, just publish it. Give it to somebody else to read it. Have eyes on this. Get the word out there. And that always stuck with me. And when I heard him doing this project, I thought, yeah, he's a walking the walk and talking the talk. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I thought this will work. And so that's the tact we took on this project as well. We made a list of people who we just really like, the dream candidates, like who could we possibly get on this? And, I mean, some of them obviously are just too busy to do it, but some of the people who said yes to this project were like, oh my gosh,
yeah.
Like they're willing to do this. And I mean, even just to take their time and to do this for us, but to, kind of stretch themselves, 'cause this is not necessarily a normal project you'd expect to see coming from a dispensational, like we're a lot more, like we'd much rather write a 30-page essay on the perfect paraphrastic use of the Greek word or verb and whatnot. And so, like, I actually asked one of our Greek professors, who's just fantastic, from Chafer Seminary, to write a devotional on a Christmas hymn. Mm-hmm. And when he sent it back to me, he said, this was a challenging project. Because he says, I'm used to this academic writing. So one thing that it did, he brought his wife in on it and they wrote it together. And so it was just really special to see how each person interacted with this. And we got something so different from each person, but yet it works together so well as a cohesive whole. And the idea behind it is, and we get, like, you'll have Christmas devotionals, whether you'll each have cover a verse of the Bible or something and explain what it means, or an event or a story or something, or some of them are story based. They'll give you a different story and whatnot. Well, one thing Brad, I think, realized was we don't really have a devotional explaining some of these Christmas hymns, because we sing them at Christmas all the time. And do we know what they mean?
Right.
And so this,
or who wrote them and what them. Their life yeah. story was and what century was it written in?
Exactly.
Right. And
yeah.
And were they actually, you know, written by people who were living in a state of, you know, having to hide their religion, you know, and it was mm-hmm. like the secret thing, or were they out in the open and everyone knew about them, right? I mean,
exactly.
There's a whole bunch there to know.
Yeah, and I mean, I know mine best and say I wrote it myself.
Right.
no ghostwriters here. I took the hymn, O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, mm-hmm. because I thought it's just a really important thing to know that when Christ came, it's fulfilling this promise of God, this restoration of what we lost in the Garden of Eden, which is God with us. And that's the name that Christ was prophesied to have, was Emmanuel, which means God with us in Hebrew. So one of the tactics I took was explaining what this word means and where we see it in Scripture through the Old Testament, where we were promised, for example, the virgin birth in Isaiah 7:14 promises that the woman will bear a child, or the virgin will bear a child, and his name will be Emmanuel. His name will be God with us.
Mm.
And like Morgan brought up, this is a very unique and radical religion, for lack of a better word. It kind of breaks the mold on that one, because this is not man reaching up to God. Mm-hmm. This is God doing everything in his power to reach down to man and to give him absolutely everything necessary to restore that fellowship that was broken when man said, I'm not doing it your way, I'm doing it my way. You're my creator, but I am ripping off the cords. This is God saying, all right, I will put myself in your place and take the consequences of that, so that you can come back into perfect fellowship, what you were built to do, what you were designed for, so that you can have that restored and you can be, or have your best life now, I guess. But yeah, I'm getting a good laugh from that one.
Ever.
Yeah. But it is that perfect restoration. And we miss the fact sometimes when we look back at the event of the incarnation, Christ returning or coming to earth. He is restoring that fellowship. When Christ was born, God himself lived on this earth among his people. And that is radical. And not only that, but he lived a life of service and fellowship with his people, of teaching. And then he went to the cross. He died in our place, not only taking on human flesh, but giving it up in the same, and dying in our place, so that we don't have to die and be apart from him, but securing eternity together with him. So when it's God with us, this isn't just a temporary thing that happened for 33 years.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that we now have as our eternal hope and promise.
Well, and it's interesting to go back to the hymn for a second, is if you were to ask all of the Christians that live in the United States of America if they know what Emmanuel means.
God with us.
So regular publications, and you've got something coming up for Christmas, okay, which we're hearing little details about. And
you can't see something about that. It's a daily devotional, and so it's one that can be started on December 1st, and so there's going to be 25 of these devotionals, so that somebody can just go from day one to day two, all the way up until the 25th of December.
It's like an Advent calendar.
Kind of like an Advent. That's right. Yeah. Exactly. And it just keeps on, and hopefully it'll bless people as they read it, and they get encouraged, and they get excited about the holiday, and just that sparkle comes back in their eyes as they think about, this is a very special time of year.
Is the whole thing about hymns?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
Christmas hymns.
Of course. Yeah. Well, there's 25 Christmas hymns.
There are more.
Oh, okay.
Hundreds.
Christmas has been special to people, right? Sure. And meant many things to people since very early in Christian history. So there's a great amount of history that goes along with that. And it's my favorite time of year.
Mm-hmm. What exactly qualifies something to be called a hymn?
That's a good question. Oh, a hymn. I thought you were going to say a Christmas hymn.
Yeah, what is it that qualifies something to be a Christmas hymn and hymn? Both.
I'll let him talk about hymns, but I'll talk about Christmas hymns, because...
Because, like, Amazing Grace was not written 2,000 years ago.
No.
Correct.
No.
Okay, but
none of these hymns were written 2,000 years ago.
Okay, so hymns are outside of the Bible.
Yeah, actually, you want to handle hymns first, and then I'll talk about what makes it a Christmas hymn.
So since the very dawn of Christianity and all the way back into Judaism, from which Christianity sprung, singing of hymns or singing of praise to God was an important part. In fact, the entire book of Psalms is a book of songs, many if not all of which are sung in the Jewish tradition. And so it's a way to obviously express our adoration to God and to do otherwise. And even in the New Testament, there is an exhortation that we would speak to one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. So we call the difference between these: a psalm is a message of devotion that addresses God. A hymn is one that talks or tells something about God.
Mm-hmm.
And a spiritual song is something of anything of a spiritual nature that teaches a good lesson or is something, a good truth that to remind ourselves of. And most of the history of Christianity involved, one, not having access to the Bible, not having access to Scripture, and two, a largely illiterate populace, not just Christianity, but the entire world. And so by bringing
oral traditions.
Oh, oral traditions.
Of course.
Absolutely. Right. And to put that to tunes, you know, in rhyme, in good verse, in really good, beautiful poetry that is worthy of its subject, is the way, and one of the ways in which Christianity spread its message, right, throughout the world and continues to celebrate its message, mm-hmm. Which is why it's so precious to us, right, as so many people celebrate the Christmas season without any religious or spiritual significance. They just love Christmas. Mm-hmm. It is especially incumbent upon us as believers to remind ourselves that this is, we are focusing ourselves on the saving message of God, on what he's done. Mm-hmm. And so that, too, for most believers, will take us away from some of maybe the materialism of Christmas that bothers us, or the hubbub and the hustle and bustle, and bring our focus back to, Morgan so well used the term devotional, which might or might not be familiar to everybody, but a devotional is a short article that is written to simply inform our focus, or bring our focus to God or to Christ or some spiritual subject. So that is why I'm in love with this form of teaching, because most people, right, could use a good, you know, we've had chicken soup for the soul. You remember that one?
Yeah.
Just good.
So there's chicken soup for the 59 topics at
this
point.
That's right. Chicken soup for the dog with three leg lover's
exactly.
soul. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But that concept of having something short that brings you, you know, some sort of meaningful emotional information or to that effect, mm-hmm. Is a longstanding Christian tradition to just want to restore our focus to a right place, you know, in a short amount of time at the beginning of the day or middle of the day or the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So that was a part of our passion, too, mm-hmm. is to get us to think about these hymns that we sing. So an incredibly long answer to your question, a hymn is a song that is written about some spiritual truth, particularly about God. And a Christmas hymn is one that includes or considers the information of the incarnation, that specific step where Jesus Christ, the Son of God, the second person of the Trinity, took on flesh and stepped down into our reality. And it's one of the defining features of Christianity, because when Jesus Christ comes to earth, he doesn't come to earth as a conquering king and as a outstanding centerpiece of history, but rather sneaks in quietly to identify himself with that experience of humanity, of being conceived and born into this world and walking around and needing his diapers changed. He experienced the entirety of the humiliating and difficult human experience to reach us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very special holiday theologically for us Christians, because it shows the extent to which and the miracle. I mean, it's unthinkable. There's got to be someone listening right now who goes, they believe God became a person. They're crazy people. And mm-hmm. I get it. It is an amazing thing to entertain, but we certainly do believe it.
These are songs that people love, mm-hmm. you know, even people who are not, you know, Christians, people who are atheists have probably heard these. And like you say, the music is beautiful. I mean, we mm-hmm. have these musicians of history have created these things, right?
Well, I might just say that the title of this work is going to be Caroling to Christmas. So Caroling to Christmas by True Grace Books, mm-hmm. and it will be all of our names probably somewhere in the book.
How do people find you?
Amazon is going to be the best way for now, though we're working on getting a website up, and hopefully we'll have that up by the time the book is out. And that is truegracebooks.org, I believe. If org doesn't work, try .com. I think it's .org.
All right. Okay, great. Well, you know, this interview will also be on my website, okay. And we can go ahead and update as necessary. So, folks, you can always go to marchtwisdale.com. I am the only March Twisdale in the world, so I actually got to do that. So go to marchtwisdale.com and then go ahead and check out the podcast, and you mm-hmm. can just, you know, check in as necessary. I'll go in and update that. That'll be
Thank
great.
You.
And for the people who aren't going to hear episode 2, last thought, Brad.
My last thought is just how incredibly wonderful it is to get to share this discussion with you. It's a mm-hmm. delight to be able to talk about these things and share these ideas. I've always thought of starting a publishing company as a almost rebellious act of getting the information mm-hmm. that you want. And I really do think that there's a great human need and importance to get your thoughts, get your ideas out there so that we can talk about them and think about them and process them. And so I guess my last thought is thank you to anybody who entertained this discussion that we've had and listened with a patient and gracious heart. And we are just very grateful that you would listen this far.
Yeah. And Morgan?
Sure. One of the things that attracts me to True Grace Books, and we'll talk more about this next week or the next episode, is the fact that we are trying to have an audience in which we're trying to bring theological ideas down from the ivory towers of the theologians and bring them down so that the average person who has an interest, they can start understanding these very complicated ideas. There was a pastor that his name was Dr. J. Vernon McGee. He used to come on the radio quite a bit. And he just had that real folksy voice. I think he was from either Texas or Oklahoma. But the one of the things that we loved about him, his voice on the radio, is that he says it's so important for teachers of the word to take the hay that's up in the loft and bring that hay down for the cows, you know, so that we could actually understand some of these complex issues. And so a lot of times when we say the word theology, some people may just roll their eyes and they're like, oh, okay, we're going to go down that road, right? But I think everybody really has an interest in who God is and what is going to happen once somebody leaves this earth. What's going to happen? And so we're hoping to be able to bring complex ideas down to the grassroots level so that we can all understand and have this discussion with one another, and so that we can sharpen one another, as it says in the scriptures, iron sharpens iron.
Right, right. I actually just sent someone a text a couple days ago with that quote. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And obviously, you know, I saying the Christian God is sort of weird, but there's people who have different concepts of God, right? You know, but the world of Christian thought obviously believes that God is not going to have like greater affinity or affection for people who are experts in the human world compared to the humble, right? I mean, you know, so why wouldn't the humble be sitting around and having these great conversations, you know, because he's not that judgmental. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Prose, Poetry, and Purpose. If you enjoyed the show, there's more to listen to at marchtwisdale.com. My guests are always amazing, so please consider sharing links to my interviews with friends, family, and on social media.
Exile here until the Son of God appear. Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel shall come to thee, O Israel.